This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV, whatever your insurance needs happen to be. The great people at Purdy Insurance will make sure you're fully insured and do whatever they can to save you money. It's all at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And anytime I get a chance to sit here and talk with Jody Mack, I relish the opportunity. My friend, welcome back.
How are you, Mr. Jones?
I'm doing well, Mr. McDonald. Everything good?
Yeah, all is well. We got the draft coming up. We got a baseball season underway. Phillies get you a little worried from time to time, but can't complain. We're sitting okay on the sports calendar these days.
And the sports calendar means that we have the NFL draft coming up, which is a season, it seems, unto itself. The Eagles, of course, right now are scheduled to pick 22. Howie Roseman and those guys seem to do a great job of finding value, and they're the type of team that finds value in the trenches. Do you think that, you know, whether it's defensive line or offensive line, you think that that's where they might go here with this?
A distinct possibility that this is not just a 1 or 2 or 3 year trend. This is goes all the way back to Andy Reid days, which was before Howie was part of the organization, but he wasn't the guru, the go-to guy on the draft. So this has been a forerunner of the Philadelphia Eagles for a long time. And yes, I think if you are a betting man, if you were just taking a position that you thought they were most likely to draft, I would say if you got the all-inclusive trenches, you would have to, it'd be less than even money. But if you split it between offense and defense, I do think offensive line is their most logical first selection.
So offensive line, what about the possibility of an edge rusher because of what happened with Reddick?
Well, I think they've already cast that die by signing Bryce up to the contract they did at $17 million per.
Yeah.
BG coming back for a swan song. They're hoping that Nolan Smith last year's, and I'll use this word, disappointment of a first-round draft pick. Doesn't mean it'll be disappointment forever, but for a first-round draft pick 1 year in, I would say his production last year was disappointing. They decided to keep Josh Sweat. They had both of their main defensive edge guys up on the final year of a contract. They extend Sweat or redo the final year of his deal, and they end up trading Reddick. So they've got some depth at that position. There is one particular player in the draft that I do like a lot, Jared Verge from Florida State. A former Albany Great Dane, which is my alma mater, before he became a Seminole. If he should fall all the way to 22, they could be tempted to go defensive end. But I don't think Verge is getting down there. So I doubt a defensive end is going to be their first pick.
I mean, to me, Verge is a top 10, is a top 10 prospect. I mean, I think he's a top 10 prospect. Now, the quarterbacks push everybody down, as you and I both know. But you're right. A former Albany Great Dane. You know what? There's certain guys that show out at just the right time. He's done it. He has, I think, a lot of the stuff, you know, measurables. He's 6'4", 260. He's quick off the line. All right? You, Albany Great Dane, should be proud of him.
Exactly. I'm kind of hoping that he falls down to the Eagles at 22 so I can watch him throughout at least the minimum first 6 years of his career. But I'm with you. I think he's a top 10 talent. I think he'll go somewhere between 10 and 20. And I don't think Howie will move up to get him. If he needs to get up to 15, 16, whatever the number they believe he's going to go at, I don't think that's a position that they would move up for. So, unfortunately, I don't think Burns is going to be an Eagle, but if he is, I'll be ecstatic.
Yeah, no, he would be a tremendous pickup for Philadelphia. You talk about the offensive line, specifically where in that line do you think they need to go? Is just somebody you can play multiple positions or somebody that's locked into a spot?
This is what I'm hearing, and I get it, but I'm not necessarily in agreement with it, that the Eagles are hoping to find a guy that, if need be, they can plug in year one at the guard position, moving their guard from the center to replace Kelsey Juergens moves inside, that they'd love to get a guy who they could play at guard for a year, two max, and if and when Lane Johnson calls it a career, be able to move him outside. That's something that I would rather see a team do with a second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, day three type pick to get a versatile guy who's a backup type player to do that with a starter. Now, they just did it with Juergens, so
it's
certainly doable, but that was a second-round pick, not a first-round pick. When you're using 22nd overall on a guy that you're going to play at one position, but then eventually hope he plays another, I'm not sure I would go there. But from what I'm hearing my sources tell me, that would be the type of player the Eagles would love to get at 22. Patanu, the big kid from Washington, certainly filled that bill. Don't know if he's going to be available. For Shanu, for your Penn State listeners, know how good a player he is. Again, if he's there at 22 or if he gets to 20, the Eagles might be willing to jump up and make a move for him. If I were a betting man, my number one choice would be J.C. Latham from Alabama. They just took Dickerson from Alabama and extended him for massive millions of dollars. He has been a tremendous success for the Eagles. I don't think they'd mind going back in to the Roll Tide offensive line to get their next biggest horse up front.
Yeah, Latham would be a terrific pick, but then again, who also recruited him heavily when he was coming out of high school? Jim Harbaugh. Where is he? Last time I checked, he was with the Chargers. So
but he's going number five. He's not taking J.C. Latham at number five.
No.
We both like Latham. He's not a top five pick.
No, he's not a top five pick. Probably Joe Walt is a guy that actually could move inside if you wanted to, but he's a top 10 pick. He's not going to be there. And that's what you have to worry about. Later rounds, defensively, where would you like to see them go when they get to the later rounds?
If they don't go corner, and I think they probably will with either their first or second, I think it's good, more likely offensive lineman. I've been saying corner all along. I thought re-signing Avante Maddox was a smart move. They got him for a very reasonable contract with a lot of things tied to incentives that takes the dire need for a slot corner off the board. So I think they're more likely to go offensive line than corner. But if they go corner, that would be right in the first round. If not, I think a cornerback in the second or third round is a possibility. Everyone will scream for a linebacker because the Eagles always underemphasize linebacker. He's not going to be in the first round. They do have 2 second-round picks. So if they use one of those two at linebacker, would not surprise me. And as you and I discussed, defensive end. But see, the defensive end group here is top-heavy for me. I think that I'd rather take a project in day three than take a defensive end in round number two with their two picks. So either first round or I think defensive end waits.
I'll throw out a corner for you that might be available. I know it won't go in round one, but he's not far from you. Max Melton of Rutgers. I'd throw that name out there and take a long, hard look at it. This kid can play.
Know him, like him. He will be there, I think, with either of the two Eagles second-round picks, and depending on what they do with their first two picks, look at the third pick, late second round, that could help to dictate what they do. I do like him. If the Eagles had a third-round pick, I think he'd be a perfect guy to slot into that third round. They do not. So if they want to take a guy like him, they're going to have to do so in the second round, which I wouldn't say is a reach. I would say it's a fair value pick. But again, depends on what they do with their first two if they're still looking for corner come their second pick in the second round.
All right, now, everything that we've been talking about is predicated on how many quarterbacks are taken, especially in round one. So let's just like slide the Eagles. Last I checked, don't need one. they're in pretty good shape there. What is your viewpoint of these top quarterbacks that everybody knows is going to go in the first round? What's your viewpoint on them?
I think they're all okay. I don't think there is a slam dunk, unquestioned, going to be like they had Trevor Lawrence, and we see with Trevor Lawrence, he's been very good. He hasn't been great yet, and he was the best prospect to come out at least 10 years, if not 20 years, back to Andrew Luck, which is less than 20 years ago. My personal favorite of all of them is Drake May from North Carolina. Yeah. And I don't know too many people that have him ranked as the number one quarterback. Most have Caleb Williams as number one. Some think Jaden Daniels actually could become the best quarterback in this class. I'm a Drake May guy. He does things from the pocket. I know that everyone wants to do stuff off schedule and out of the pocket, and that's a major added value. You still have to be able to do it. It's got to start in the pocket. And I think he's the best pocket quarterback of the group. And, oh, by the way, he's athletic to make plays off schedule and outside the box. It's not like he's a statue in the pocket. I think he's got the best in-pocket game and does give you that flexibility to get outside when necessary. So he would be my top-ranked guy. Williams and Daniels are both close for me. Mm-hmm. And then there's a drop-off. I know J.J. McCarthy has moved up a lot of draft boards with the phenomenal record they put up at Michigan, but Michigan won a championship more so because of defense and the ability to run the ball than J.J. McCarthy throwing it for me. I'm not as high on him as some. If he ends up going in the top five, some people think that it's going to be quarterback, 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 and then another at either four or five. I think he will be woefully overdrafted. And of the other quarterbacks in the draft, I think Michael Penix is the best group. Yeah. Bo Nix is rated by some ahead of Penix. I would take Penix. I think, again, his ability to do things from the pocket would intrigue me if I were a team like the Raiders, who probably should be drafting a quarterback in the first round in the mid-teens. Don't know if they will, but I think Penix would be a really good fit in Vegas.
Yeah, no, Penix, and it's interesting you mentioned the six, because I broadcast games with three of the six. Bo Nix, Penix several times, McCarthy several times. I'm with you on McCarthy. Do I think he's a good player? Yes. Do I think he moves well enough with and can improvise when it's time to run? Yes. Do I think he's accurate? He's okay. Right? But picking him in the top five, Jody, no way. And in a 1 through 32, he's not one of the 32 best players out there.
I don't think so.
No, I mean, that's just me.
Or I think so. But again, you said it earlier, and you were dead on right. Quarterbacks get moved up the board, artificially moved up the board because of the importance of the position. And there are a good number of teams in the NFL right now that need to change out their quarterback, that need to take a shot and go with some youth. Now, you got to get it right. And I'm not sure about J.J. McCarthy. Sounds like you're not either. But mark my words, somebody is going to take him in the first. I think the absolute furthest he can fall in the draft is down to the top dozen. I'd be shocked if he's still on the board come pick number 13. And good luck to whatever team takes him.
Isn't it amazing? All of you would be shocked how much we think alike, because I'm sitting there thinking he will go past 12, and then he says it. That's amazing.
Smart minds think alike, Steve.
That's right. And we can promote ourselves as smart minds. That's our job. We can do that all we want. Because, you know, what's interesting is that, like, Caleb Williams. Now, I did not do a Caleb Williams game because Penn State did not play Oklahoma or USC. Now, they will this year, but not with him there. But I watch him. You know what strikes me about him? And you can't do this in this league. He holds the ball too long. And in this league, if you hold the ball too long, you are looking up at the sky.
He wants to make the big play, and it's understandable because he's as talented a kid as he is. What bothers me is I actually think he went backwards from this year from the previous year. And I always like my quarterbacks trending up rather than going back. Now, USC's defense stunk. I'm not sure they could stop you and I, but so he was usually playing from behind and had to throw the football a lot. So, and his offensive line was, and for USC, that's bad that they don't have a good offensive line, but it wasn't great this past year. So there are some explanations as to why he took a slight step back this year, but still not something I want to see if I'm going to be using the number one overall pick on a QB.
All right, so overall, when you look at this draft, I mean, you have to make a selection that fits you in a lot of ways. Is this the kind of draft that has enough depth in it, in your opinion, to help teams?
Yes, and there's one position above all others, in my opinion, and this could be, I guess it's an outside shot that the Eagles could take their second-round pick at this position. I would probably say doubtful, but not impossible. Wide receiver. This is one of the best wide receiver drafts we've had in years. Certainly at the top with the three guys who are going to go in the top 10 picks overall, Harrison, Adunze, and Neighbors. And then their strength afterwards, all the way through the first three rounds of the draft. If you get a wide receiver in the first 2 days, you've got a guy who's going to be good enough to step in and play for you day number one. So that's, for me, that's the most impressive position. Yeah. Second would probably be offensive line, where we think the Eagles may very well go. There are at least six, if not seven, that are going to go in the first round, and one very well may be the Eagles. And what I'm told is the depth at offensive line is pretty good, too. Maybe not as good as wide receiver depth-wise, but offensive line is another position that will be grading highly 5 years down the road, which is when we should actually. We'll grade the draft 10 minutes after it's over, but we should really wait 5 years to be able to say, yeah, that was a hell of a draft, or, oh, my God, that was a terrible draft. We have to wait and see.
See, this is why I bring him on. He brings that kind of perspective. That's the realistic perspective. But we all have to grade it the day after. Oh, it's a C. Nobody knows.
Oh, yeah.
Jody, you're the best, my friend. Look forward to talking to you again. Maybe we'll talk again before the Derby. How about that?
Done deal. You call, I'll answer with a winner.
You got it. Thank you, my friend.
Take it easy, Steve.
The great Jody McDonald, Jody Mac. Talking about the Eagles draft. We did that, by the way, to appease Matt Cotrillo. He has been going through draft scenarios left and right. He has, in fact, he's done now 272 draft boards. I tried to point out that, like, that's probably too many. I know, Todd, you tried to talk him off the ledge.
He likes his scenarios.
Oh. It's like the guy that does 272 brackets for the NCAA tournament says, I got it right! Which one? We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
Spring has sprung, and it's time to dust off those insurance policies. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855 or visit our website at purdyinsurance.com to see what we can do for you.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake, a service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
We'll be right back.
ranked as 272 brackets, tells us that he got the final four right. Bracket included Colgate. He's like, really? Okay.
Shh, he's right here.
Well, I know he's right there. That's why I'm saying all this stuff. Wait, you think I don't say this stuff to his face? Come on, man. What's he saying? Oh, he's talking about somebody can't play defense?
Kentucky
playing can't play defense.
Yeah, that's who he had. I can't say anything. I had them in the Final Four, too.
Yay. That's the odd thing, because that was the big change that John Calipari made at Kentucky this year. They emphasized offense after he spent years emphasizing defense. And that's where things like ended up falling apart for them.
Oh,
they were not a good defensive team this year.
No, and honestly, neither. It was funny because Alabama was kind of the same way, and Alabama figured out the defensive part of it, and Kentucky never did.
Alabama figured it out to a point. I thought they played well against UConn for the most part defensively, but they figured it out to a point. They gave up a lot of points this year. They had a lot of those 100-95 games. Okay. it's entertaining. Right? Very entertaining, but still. There has to be some sort of balance between the two. And I don't know, I mean, it's up to coach to find those kind of players, because you have to have players that are willing to play it. You can't have a group of guys that are out there and defense is only something that they're forced to do by the rules. Yeah.
That's okay. Me. I'm a pure shooter.
You're a pure shooter. Is a suit a pure shooter?
I'm a pure fouler.
Yeah, it's...
He says he's a pure fouler. He is correct about that. I mean, you're the kind of guy they bring into the game late. Like, hey, look, we need your help here. You got five fouls, right?
His okay. Name is Fouls to Give.
Perfect. Can't wait. This half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. More next half hour. Great to have you with us as we continue here on News Radio 1070 WKOK from the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15 in Nobles Wharf and online at sunburymotors.com. On News Radio 1070 WKOK, the home of 272 soup brackets.
An in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the last half hour of the Steve Jones Show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. This half hour is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, the beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. We're going to talk to Rich Garcella here for a little bit about the blue-white game and some things that he saw during spring practice.
We get right out of the gate with the outstanding Rich Garcella, Reading Eagle. And Rich, always a pleasure. Great to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Steve.
It was great to see you on Saturday, by the way. I know I didn't really get a chance to talk to you that much. You and Wogan Rich were deeply entwined there. So,
yeah, we were, unfortunately. But, yeah, good to talk to you now, though.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you now. So, Rich, I always refer to this as Blue-White Game Over Reaction Monday.
That's good, because I agree.
But just a general observation, and maybe in part backed up by conversations you had with players afterward, what were your thoughts?
I'll get to the main point. I'll back into this. The first thing is obviously with Nick Singleton and Catron Allen not playing in the blue-white game, it was interesting to watch Quinton Martin and Cam Wallace And we understand Cam Wallace has had a good spring, and to see Martin on the field for the first time in person, it was nice. They both had productive days, and they're competing obviously to be the number three running back, which is significant. I mean, it is. It's not, you know, at the top of the list of priorities, but sure. Got a chance to see Audavian Collins, who I heard a lot of good things about, play at cornerback. That was good. Same thing for A.J. Harris and Jalen Kimber. But to me, the biggest takeaway I had from the game, there's another, the wide receiver situation, which has been talked about, but the fact that Abdul Carter looked like a natural defensive end. Again, he's not going against first-team guys. I get it. But that quickness off the ball is something that is almost unteachable. And in talking to him after the game, I asked him, is the door still open for you to play some linebacker? And he, was very, very coy about it. And I got the feeling that he will be used at both positions come the fall because of how the rotation is at defensive end. They've got so many talented defensive ends. I can see that happening, that he's going to be used at both positions in the fall. I don't know that for a fact. That's just my take after talking to him.
And I would say this, and it was something Jack and I brought up in the broadcast on our side on Saturday, and we talked about the fact that as a defensive end, Penn State over the years has used zone blitz. Adisa Isaac ended up being really good at it. When you have a guy that's played linebacker before, now playing that spot, it's a more natural part of playing that spot, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I could see, he was, I thought he did really well in coverage last year. I really do.
Yeah, me too.
When he dropped into pass coverage. And yeah, I could see that, and it makes it easier, makes it natural. But I can see situations, Steve, where it's third and two or fourth and one or whatever, and Tom Allen wants to put three linebackers on the field to stop the run and move him, to linebacker for that down and bring somebody else in up front. Right. I mean, I could see that. I mean, he's... I was looking over my notes from an interview I did with Manny Diaz last year, and he went on and on about how versatile Abdul Carter is, and he mentioned what Manny's defense did in 22 with Tick Brown, and about moving him around and being in different places. Now, I haven't had a chance to talk to Tom Allen one-on-one, but I can see that. I can see them using Abdul Carter that way, and I brought up in my column that in the print edition today, I remember that Brent Pry designed to hold his defense in 2020 around Micah Parsons for good reasons, and then of course we know what happened. Micah opted out because of COVID, but to use him in multiple ways, and I could see Tom Allen doing that. Again, I don't know that's going to happen, but I certainly can see that.
Yeah. There'll be a lot made, of course, the quarterbacks. If the stadium were on the coast, they would have been referring to the winds as gale force on Saturday. I mean, just in general, not just your thoughts, but the conversations afterward about them, because the conversations afterward deal with the other 14 practices.
Yeah, I mean, I think, things that I've heard, and you've seen some, at least some practices. I have not seen more than, maybe 10 or 15 minutes in person. But I know that both people had a good spring. That's what I've been hearing. I've been told that. And I heard Drew's had a good spring. I just don't put a lot of stock into, like, a scrimmage like that. And again, the weather was just awful. I mean, the sun was out, and that's about all you can say positively.
Yeah.
I was out in the parking lot before the game, and I couldn't believe how much the wind was gusting. And honestly, you can't really draw much from that, what happened. But I think the other thing, Steve, as you know, that offense was as vanilla as it can be. And, you know, Andy Kotelnicki, who I talked to almost 2 weeks ago now, I mean, we know there's going to be a lot of motion. There's going to be a lot of shifts, a lot of pre-snap movement. There was none of that on Saturday. None. You know, and for good reason. I understand why. So, you know, it's hard to draw. I think the fact that Drew Aller and Bo Prabula, and the only receiver I spoke to after the Blue White game Saturday, Caden Saunders, their eyes lit up when you asked about the offense, the new offense, and about Andy Kotelnicki. And that says a lot.
Yeah. I mean, because that what's interesting about that is, I think idealistically in a practice, let's just say it's a five-minute period. There's 17 reps in the period. James Franklin is the coach. One way or the other wants it to be 9-8. Mm-hmm. And for him, during the course of the spring, the defense won its fair share of reps. The offense won its fair share of reps. And I think you come out of it when that happens, you do feel better about what you're seeing out there because that's what they're getting. If that doesn't happen in the blue-white game.
Right, right. I mean, you and I have seen, I can't even imagine combined how many blue-white games. Oh. And I never cease to amaze how fans, other people, just draw conclusions from a 2-hour scrimmage. It just blows my mind, and I've seen it repeatedly over the last 35 years, and I'm just surprised. I'm still surprised by that today that people are drawing conclusions about things. So I you know, you take it with a grain of salt. You know what you see. Okay, you know this and that. You know, me being from Reading, I spent a lot of time watching Javon Williams.
Yes,
because he's from our area, and I wanted to see him live. Mm-hmm. He did okay. I mean, he was going against Jameel Lyons, who we know has an unbelievable burst, and. You know, that's what I wanted to watch. Like, okay, that you can see things. But really, other than that, there's, you know, other than the things that I've already mentioned, you really can't draw many conclusions from what happened Saturday.
Well, yeah, Javon Williams and Jamel Lyons had some interesting confrontations during the course of the...
Yes, they
faced
did.
Off each other a lot during the course of the spring.
Yes.
And you and I have probably seen them combined, maybe better than 90 of these combined.
I've seen close to 40, you know, including when I was in school.
Okay, and I'm up to 45.
Uh-huh.
You know, look, and I'm trying to think how many of these things I broadcast, 26 or 27
of
them,
gosh.
Whatever. But I'll lend this perspective. I understand people drawing conclusions from it, and that's why you and I come on and talk about it to give some perspective and context to it, because that's the only exposure they have.
True. Right? That's a good point, Steve. Yeah.
It's the only thing they see. And as I tell people, I said, yeah, I saw the other 14 practices. Okay.
Yeah.
So it gives you you can obviously give some context to what's going on.
I wish I could see as many practices as you and for longer, but obviously that's not going to happen. And I understand, you know, what can I do? But the point is, you're right. Fans see it. And I don't know how many people are watching on TV. You know, obviously it wasn't a great crowd size-wise, and it was because of the weather, and I understand that. But you're right. It's their opportunity to see some of these players. It was my first opportunity to see some of these guys live, you know, other than 10 minutes of practice.
Right.
So, I think, the big question going forward here now is about the wide receivers.
Sure.
Are they good enough? You know, and I obviously asked James that question after the blue-white game, and he said they are. Drew Aller said they are. You know, the receivers in the room said, you know, we're ready to go forward here. Nobody, mentioning, Keandre Lambert-Smith's expected transfer. So that's going to be interesting to follow here as the portal opens. You know, does Penn State pursue anybody in the portal? I don't know. Can they attract somebody out of the portal? I don't know. Only time will tell.
And the portal, by the way, will open up officially tomorrow.
Correct.
And, and James, I'm going to guess that when it was brought up, he mentioned, I probably used the words honest conversations. Would that be correct?
He mentioned that in response to another question, yes.
Yeah. And that's what it comes down to. The players give their feedback. The position coach inserts their feedback. Then they meet with James. They go from there. That's the process moving forward for them. And that's the way it is. What is – this will be a philosophy question here.
Okay.
What is more interesting to you now? Is it the games – or is it the off season with all the movement?
Oh man, that's a great question, Steve. The games to me are still number one, mm-hmm. but obviously everything else that has changed in college football over the last 5 years, it's become similar to the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, even Major League Baseball with the player movements. And, we could spend – I'm sure you've spent hours upon hours talking about this. The portal isn't going anywhere. That's not going to change.
Right.
But I think I mentioned this last time I was with you. I can see – collective bargaining happening. I just think that's where we're headed. I just think that's where we're headed to put some, as James Franklin and other coaches have said, to put some guardrails up around this, because roster management used to be, I don't know how many months of the year. Well, now it's 12 months of the year, and every day they're managing. Division I college football coaches are managing their roster. And that means checking on their guys. Are they going? Are they staying? What are they? That kind of thing. And then doing their diligence by checking the portal.
Yeah.
That they're doing their due diligence by doing that. So, it's interesting. It's also tiring. I will say that.
Yeah. I would think from a writer's point of view, the blue-white game's over, you've been done interviews and used to do features in the past off of that, and then there was that kind of lull. And probably the transfer portal takes care of the lull in terms of generating stories. I'm spitballing here.
Right? I mean, right now, honestly... I'm done with what I have left from the blue-white game. So what I'll do over the next month or so is work on freelance stories for Town and Gown's Penn State Football Annual, and I'll work on my Penn State content for Lindy's College Football, which I've done for almost three decades. That's what I usually have done this time of the year, but I also now have to keep an eye on the portal. Yeah, for sure.
So what are your deadlines on each one of those, on Town and Gown and Lindy's?
Oh, gosh.
Where you're able to get in as much of the latest information as possible.
Well, Town and Gown is later than Lindy's. We could go now probably sometime in June. With that, and I don't want to speak for our editor, Mark Brackenberry, who does a terrific job. But Lindy's usually, and I haven't heard from them yet, but this is typical. They want the stuff by the first week of May, and the national edition. They want that, that's the first thing they want. So sometimes they've wanted that before the end of April, and other times than, you know, the Big Ten edition of Lindy's, it's a little later, maybe a week or 2 weeks later. You know, usually by May 10th, I have to have all that done.
Right.
Yeah. So you don't have all the player movements in there. No, you don't.
Right.
No.
Right. And again, for me, it's an easy call. I have so much fun broadcasting a game. The games are exponentially not even close for me, but that's because of the job I have. I mean, look, I've got the candy store jobs, so, you know.
Yeah, but the reason why I'm still doing this is one, the games.
Yeah.
I love writing. I mean, it could be about anything in sports, but the games, those Saturdays are, you know, most Saturdays anyway, are special. I mean, you know, sometimes they'll be playing on Thursday or Friday, but Saturdays are special. I love that. And secondly, and I don't know if we've ever talked about this, is the people on the Penn State football beat. You know, they're some of my best friends.
Yep.
Really good people. I'm not going to go down and mention names because, I don't want to forget anybody. But I, you know, since I started for the Reading Eagle in 1989 covering Penn State, the camaraderie on the beat has been terrific. And, you know, there are people we've lost, as you know, over the years.
Yeah.
Jerry Keller in particular, he was my best friend. And there are other people, but to see them, like Saturday, that was great, seeing everybody Saturday. And then seeing everybody during the course of the season, that's very special to me.
And just so, and I've mentioned, I don't know how many times I've mentioned on the show, what an awesome group that happens to be, because it is. I mean, it really is, which is great.
Thank you, Steve, but I am very proud of the work that the people who cover this team put out.
Yes.
And I know many have been recognized in writing contests, and I think, you know, I've heard people who wouldn't know scoff at the people who cover Penn State for various reasons, I'll just say. And I would defend the integrity of this group. I would defend it against anybody.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. Completely agree with that. And I've said that before on the show. Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't hesitate to say that because I know for a fact it's true.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Rich, thanks so much. Appreciate the time. I know you jumped in late, and that was really cool, but that's the kind of guy you are.
Anytime, Steve. You know that. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Rich. Rich Scarcella, Reading Eagle. Brilliant work, as always. All right. We'll come back on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay.